This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Savor, production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about ice wine.
And I am so excited to talk about ice wine.
Yes. Yes, me too. I didn't know how excited I was going to be until I started reading about it. And then I was like, this is heckin' metal.
It's so very cool. Very cool.
Oh, the puns begin already.
Right off the bat.
Excellent.
Yes. You know, drink responsibly as always with these episodes.
Yep.
But this is a topic several of you have requested. I know we've told the story before, but for me, I've only ever had ice wine at Epcot in Disney World.
At the Food and Wine Festival. Yeah.
Yes. At the Canadian booth. They have like a flight of ice wines you could try. And every time I think of that, it warms my heart. We had such a good time.
We did. That was a really delightful day with really delightful human people. All I really want to do is walk around a Disney theme park with Veuve Clicquot.
And I like how we like took the whole day. We like slowly did it. That's very
nice.
Oh, yeah.
One of these years, it's going to be back again.
One of these years. Oh, but in the meantime, let's get to our question. Ice wine. What is it?
Well, ice wine is a type of wine made from frozen grapes. And when has anything that we have ever talked about had this literal of a name?
Never? Never?
Like, thank you, Germany and the German language. Y'all so literal. It's great. Yes. Oh, beautiful. Eiswein, I believe, is the German word for it. But okay. So, ice wine. Or let's back up a step from that to just regular wine. Because when you make wine, what you're doing is pressing the juice called must in the biz. You're pressing the must from grapes, discarding the skins and pulp, and then adding yeast and maybe other stuff to that must that will eat some of the sugars in it and poop alcohol and carbon dioxide. And then you let that happen until you get the alcohol content you want. Then you might treat the wine in a number of ways, filtering, blending, aging, barreling, etc., before bottling it. And this is what you do for ice wine, except you are, again, using frozen grapes. And when you press them, a bunch of the water ice in them sort of sticks with the skins in the pulp, and you discard that too. So the must that you get has a higher concentration of sugars, acids, and flavor compounds than usual. Like, you only get about 10 to 15% of what a normal yield of must would be when you press ice wine grapes. And that's what you go on to ferment and make your wine with. And harvesting grapes for wine is always a tricky business. You know, like, you want to get them when they've ripened to just the right point to where they've developed the amount of sugars and acids and flavor compounds that you want for the specific wine that you're making. And there can be any number of barriers to that along the way in terms of weather and pests and what have you. But for ice wine, it's even trickier because you're harvesting and pressing grapes that have frozen on the vines at a good stage of ripeness and at a temperature that's cold enough that the water in the grapes is like mostly frozen, but there's still enough liquid in there for you to, you know, like press out and use.
Right.
And all of this is complicated by the fact that sugar lowers the freezing point of water. Apparently, for the amount or concentration of sugar that you're hoping your grapes have developed for ice wine, you want temperatures that dip just below -8 degrees Celsius or about 17 degrees Fahrenheit. And you want that freeze to be sustained for about 6 hours, at least 6 hours before you harvest. There's, of course, different different makers are going to have different processes. But yeah. So you've got this small window of time that you're basically just guessing is the best window. And you've also got to start with grapes that can withstand this. Riesling and Vidal are both popular because they've got thicker skins and other desirable traits, acidity, late season ripening, stuff like that. And so depending on where you're growing your vines, you know, all of this probably means that you're harvesting and pressing in the dead of winter, at night, outdoors, and in a hustle. And if you've ever tried to squeeze frozen things, like one winemaker told the New York Times that it's like squeezing marbles. You can imagine that technology, machinery, weather forecasting, chemistry, all of that has made all of this significantly easier, but it's still a really impressive effort. And ice wine makers have to take all kinds of steps on top of the normal stuff that you would do to protect wine grapes while they're growing, to protect them from inclement weather, you know, hail and what have you, from scavenging animals, hungry birds that are like, oh, look at this whole frozen crop of grapes, let's eat that, mold infestations, and on, while you wait for the temperature to be just right. And there is no promise that the weather is ever going to be just right in any given growing season. In many areas that produce ice wine, you go in knowing that you're not going to get a harvest every year. And, you know, you can still use those grapes to press and make other wines, sometimes called, sometimes marketed as like late season wines, but ice wine is what you're going for. And, you know, it might never freeze to the right temperature. If it does, you've got to jump on it because like you probably need to get a crew together on a day's notice or less, or the weather could turn too warm or too cold and you lose the crop. Weather is finicky. That freeze might come before the grapes are ready. In the Northern Hemisphere, you know, it can happen in November. It can happen in March.
Wow.
And after you get that must, after if all of this has gone well enough that you get that must, there's another complication in that the sugar concentration that you're working with is nearly twice that of like normal grape must. And actually borders on being fungicidal, meaning that you're going to have just a heck of a time getting your fermenting yeasts to do their thing. Oh, but that result, like a delicately sweet, tart, slightly syrupy wine, generally made as a white wine, pale to golden in color, but can be made red too. I've even seen some sparkling ice wines for sale, generally served chilled. It's just refreshing and warming at the same time. Really great with a cheese course. And if you've been thinking this whole time, well, okay, why go to all this trouble to let the weather freeze your grapes or not when you can just use a freezer to freeze grapes? People totally do that. Though in many countries, this cannot legally be labeled ice wine. It's instead called maybe iced wine or vin de glace or icebox wine, which really cracks me up.
Yeah, that's a good one. There's a lot of argument about the terminology. I know I saw like Canada. Is it Canada? It's no space between ice and wine and capitalized? Somewhere it's capitalized.
Yeah. Well, I think the noun in German would be capitalized. Mm. So I don't know. Nobody asked me. no one talked to me about it.
What?
So I'm just reporting the facts, y'all.
Ridiculous.
and all of this does mean that it tends to be expensive, and is also sold in half size bottles, like 375 milliliter rather than 750s.
Yeah. Oh, I got to get my hands in some of this now. I've never had it outside of Disney World. So
I think I've seen it a few places in town. It definitely exists.
Well, you know, you can get delivery alcohol temporarily Atlanta right now. So
you can, and I believe that the liquor store nearest you does indeed have some.
Oh. Ooh, okay. Well, that's exciting. But what about the nutrition?
Drink responsibly. you know, this one's got a bunch of sugar in it. It's usually served in small glasses for a reason. Yeah.
I do think it's funny that it's like New Year's. A lot of people are doing dry January, and our second episode is ice wine.
Oh, yeah. Oops. Sorry, guys.
But it's so interesting, though.
it is the season. It's like traditionally the harvesting season for ice wine. So
hey, timely for once. So we're getting a little better at that. But anyway, numbers. We do have some numbers. Germany and Canada are the largest producers of ice wines. And depending on the year, around 75% of ice wines come out of Ontario, Canada. I think I saw like up to 80 come out of Canada in general. In 2012, this came out to be $32 million out of Ontario ice wines.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's an annual Niagara Ice Wine Festival every January. It's on hiatus this year, though. So
yeah. Canada shipped 500,375 milliliter bottles of ice wine to 35 different countries in 2011. And duty-free sales at airports are huge for Canadian ice wine. Like, they kept bring it up like it's a nice luxury item sell in airports. However, several European countries make ice wine. Some states in the U.S. and Japan and China have gotten into the game as well. And a handful of other countries make a little bit, but definitely Canada and Germany. And those are the big
two. Yeah, but the biggest markets for ice wine, are Japan, China, the United States, and Scandinavia.
Yes, and due to this labor intensiveness of production, the relative rarity of regions that can produce it, which are going down because of climate change, and inconsistencies in yield, yes, ice wine can be and often is quite expensive, like $30 to $150 a bottle. I'm sure there's even more expensive bottles, but...
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think the like average-ish price is around 50. Mm-hmm. And again, that's for the smaller size bottle. Of the total global harvest of wine grapes, only 0.1% or less becomes ice wine.
Wow. Well, ice wine has a fascinating history.
It does, and we will get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, historians believe the first ice wines came out of a freezing German winter towards the end of the 1700s. The story goes that when cold weather set in early, prior to the harvesting of the crop of grapes, winemakers were determined to salvage the situation. They didn't want to waste all these grapes. They were trying to find a way to use them. So they took the frozen grapes, pressed and fermented them, which resulted in... yes, this very sweet wine. And it turned out consumers were into it. By the mid-1800s, Germany was regularly producing ice wine, although it was still pretty rare-ish. And we'll get into that in a second. But several ice wine experts, or I guess people who've just researched into the history of ice wine, perhaps, differentiate between this as one of the first examples of modern ice wine. But also they specify an ancestor that went back as far as ancient Rome. And that's mostly based on a poem, a Roman poem, mentioning frost-starved November grapes. Our old pal Pliny even wrote about some types of grapes that are, quote, not harvested until it is frozen. However, there were hardly any mentions of ice wine after this until this time in the 1700s. Huh. Yeah. The first known documented case of ice wine production in Germany dates back to 1830, made with grapes from 1829. Later, a monument even went up in Dromersheim to commemorate ice wine's history there. It's a pretty sweet statue. I really like that statue.
Oh, I didn't look at it. Okay, it's
Googling
like
now.
Yes, go ahead.
It's like a snowflake, but then there's wine in it. It's pretty.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
However, throughout the 19th century, there are only 6 documented instances of ice wine production in Germany. That doesn't mean it wasn't happening, but it's hard to say for sure. Many label Dr. Hans-Georg Ambrosi as the father of ice wine. He served as the director at Rheingau State Domain from 1967 to 1999, and his work with ice wines began in South Africa, where laws around wine weren't as strict then, in 1955. Through him, consistent commercial production increased, and his efforts certainly popularized the product.
In 1961, the invention of a special press that uses these pneumatic bladders to squeeze the must from the frozen grapes also made the process a bunch easier. I guess before that, and even with it, like, it's not super infrequent for presses to break during the pressing process.
Yeah, that's what I read, too.
Yeah. And it was that kind of time that Dr. Ambrosi was working. It was a good couple decades of technological development for ice wine, from plastics to, you know, help protect the grapes before harvest, and portable generators were both great boons to ice wine makers.
Yes, yes. And if it wasn't clear, Dr. Ambrosi was from Germany. So when German immigrants arrived in Canada, many continued the tradition of ice wines, particularly in, yes, Ontario and British Columbia. And commercial ice wines were being produced in those two territories by the 1970s. The believed first was produced by German immigrant Walter Heinle out of British Columbia in 1973. Along with his son and his son's wife, they offered their first commercial ice wine in 1978. However, starting in the 1980s, winemakers out of Ontario really took off when it came to Canadian ice wine production. One of these winemakers was Dr. Joseph Pahorley, who opened Newark Winery in 1979. In 1983, Pahorley made an ice wine for Hillebrand, which is another Canadian winery. And by the next year, several Canadian winemakers were leaving grapes on the vine specifically to produce ice wine. In 1984, Inniskillen Wines and Rife Estate Winery became the first to sell ice wine on the Niagara Peninsula. Inniskillen, at the time run by Austrian immigrant Karl Kaiser, often is credited with producing the first commercial Canadian ice wine that same year, as well as the first to use netting to keep birds from eating the grapes, which, yes, was this big problem. A 1989 vintage wine from Inniskillen won the 1991 Grand Prix d'Honneur at one of the biggest and most respected wine exhibitions, and the world started to pay attention to Canadian ice wine. And it was kind of a scandal because Canadian ice wine was illegal in Europe at the time.
Oh.
So it shouldn't have technically been allowed to enter.
Oh.
Mm-hmm, ice wine scandal. After this, Inniskillen launched Operation Ice Storm, nice, to boost international sales, specifically targeting Asia. And it was highly effective. It took a minute for it to set in, but when it did, people were shocked. Like, the people behind this Operation Ice Storm,
they were like, oh,
wow,
that worked well.
Yeah, exactly. From 2004 to 2011, ice wine sales in China went up by 15 times and also led to a market for imitation ice wine in the country.
Yeah, parallel to all of this hubbub about Canadian ice wines in the 1980s, the process of artificial ice wine making was developed. Fruit freezing grapes after harvest. And in the industry, it's called cryo extraction.
Yes.
Right? Like I said, this whole thing is pretty metal. Mm-hmm. Much easier, much less expensive. And also just people wag their fingers at it in the industry. They're like, oh, that's not a real ice wine.
Yeah. And it's really funny. I mean, I didn't have time to dig too much into the numbers, but I read an article of somebody who makes Canadian ice wine, and they were asking him about this whole thing. And he, according to him, 80% of the ice wine in China is not real ice wine. But he did a tasting, and it was I thought it was very funny because he paused and he was like, okay, so it's not bad.
No.
He's like, it's pretty good for an imitation. Like, he was still trying to.
Oh.
Yeah, I appreciated it. Canadian ice wines for importation were officially recognized as ice wines, no longer illegal in Europe, by the EU in 2001. Due to climate change, none of Germany's ice wine regions were able to produce any ice wines for the first time in 2019. And this is after years of pretty steady decline in production.
Yeah, the grapes have been ripening faster. The temperatures have been staying warmer for longer. It all culminated in 2019, being the first season that, no ice wines were made in Germany. And so, let's all do better about climate change.
Yeah, and my... This very day, my Google alerts pushed this notification that I think it's Hokkaido, somewhere in Japan, just harvested their grape shore ice wine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because like you said, it's happening now in some places. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Hopefully, I've read that the season has been pushing out more into February than... When it has been happening over in Germany, so hopefully they'll get it back this year. But
fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm.
Fingers crossed. Well, this was certainly a very, very fun one to look into.
Yes. Thank all y'all who suggested it.
Yes.
And we do have some other notes from listeners for you.
We do, but first we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth.
Salad dressing, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico. We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks. But I want to go back because, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip together.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with listener,
listener mail.
I was going to attempt to do like a Frozen Let It Go thing, and I immediately backed out.
That's what I thought. Yeah, behind the scenes, y'all. Or I'm not sure if we left that in or if that counted as a retake. But but yeah. There was a giggle and then a no, not that one. Anything but that one.
I didn't want to put you all through that if you didn't want to go through it.
Yeah.
But Lauren, she's had to suffer me singing that song. Well, I just thought it would be a good intersection of like the ice wine and the Disney experience and Frozen.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of things happening.
Yeah. It was actually in that car ride to Orlando on that trip that I believe I heard most of the Frozen songs that I've heard for the first time. I've still not seen those films.
Yeah.
So.
And I was belting it out. I had no right to, but I did.
Oh, no, that's what that's what car songs are about.
I appreciate it. Those notes are hard to hit.
They are. It's a hard song.
Yeah. I gave it my all. But anyway, Shauna wrote, my mom once had a big salt and pepper shaker collection. Sadly, we somehow lost them in the move. Over the past 10 years, she has gotten a handful more sets. She, too, has one lonely T-Rex in a gold bow tie shaker from Target. We had purchased a set for my oldest nephew 1 year for Christmas, and the little weirdo only took one home. I had listened to the mocktail episode and was completely intrigued by Julia Bainbridge's book and got it for Christmas. I can't wait to read through it and try some of the recipes. And I love the name Good Drinks. It has a much better ring to it than mocktail. I also checked out BB's Kitchen from my local library and already found a couple things I want to try. I was listening to the episode Listener Mail 2, The Next Batch, and someone wrote in talking about an Easter in Florida and an orange egg hidden in an orange tree. This brought back memories of some Easters that I had growing up in South Lake Tahoe, California. There was the Easter that we had at The Rock, where we had to literally look under rocks, behind trees, in bushes, etc., to find Easter eggs. There was also an Easter at one of my aunt's house where my uncle decided to hide one of the eggs inside of the giant pothole that we lovingly called Little Lake Tahoe, as it was shaped just like the lake at the end of the driveway that was full of water. The craziest Easter that we had was when I was about 12. The weather sucked. I don't remember now if it was rain or snow that kept us indoors. And so all of us kids were sent off to the room while the grown-ups hid the eggs. The men got a little crazy with it. When us kids came out to find the eggs, we found that my cousin's boyfriend had stabbed one of the eggs into the wall and crumpled one of the eggs into an empty glass jar.
What?
The red egg was hidden in a bowl of salsa. The yellow egg was hidden in the bowl of potato salad. The green egg was hidden in the bowl of guacamole. And Annie, you're going to want to close your eyes and plug your ears for this part. The white egg was hidden in a bowl of ranch dressing. By the end of the hunt, the kitchen was a hot mess and the food no longer edible, at least in my opinion. All the hands digging in the food didn't stop a couple of people from eating it.
Oh my gosh.
That's epic. Wow. That is an epic Easter egg hunt.
Yeah.
But yes, the food was probably no longer...
Yeah, even pre-pandemic times, I think I would have been like, I don't know. I don't know about that. I'm pretty comfy with germs, but...
Yeah.
Little kid hands, man.
Yeah, like more than like multiple little kid hands. Different kids. Yeah. Messy. Very messy, but...
But impressive.
Very impressive. Yes.
Yeah. I am impressed.
Yes.
Rebecca wrote, a few years ago, I was watching Grey's Anatomy when someone came through a door bringing ginger scones. I thought, brilliant, and started looking for a recipe. What I found in my joy of cooking was a recipe for the cake-like gingerbread, gave that a whirl, and fell in love. My family also loves it, so now I make it at Thanksgiving and Christmas. This Thanksgiving, I was inspired to try and make a gingerbread drink. I created it based on the ingredients for the cake. It contains a teaspoon of simple syrup made with brown sugar, a teaspoon of molasses, an ounce of Domaine de Canton ginger liqueur. Sure. Yeah, that ginger liqueur, the one in the pretty bottle, you know? an ounce of Goldschlager, cinnamon schnapps, and hot water. And it's a drink that will warm you, Rebecca says.
Ooh, I bet.
Right?
I bet.
That sounds delicious.
It sounds delightful. Oh, yeah.
I want one of those right now.
I know. Also, I love my mom had joy of cooking. And that's every time I think of that, I think of her because she would just like get it out and sort of flip
kind of
through.
Page. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
She wasn't looking for anything in particular, but some kind of idea.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was a staple in my household growing up as well.
Yeah. Well, thanks to both of those listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, we would love to hear from you. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
And we are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. All three places, our handle is @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thank you, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressing, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico is home to a thriving culinary scene based on products and traditions from the native Taino, African, and Spanish peoples that have influenced it.
When you go, there are a host of restaurants, bars, breweries, distilleries, farms, and coffee houses to dig into, from five-star experiences to local favorites.
No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. from Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.